Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 8th, I guess the day of the eclipse. It was the first time that I remember getting involved with an eclipse. I don't remember the last time that we had one, but it was a pretty spectacular view around here. I think we in North Texas must have been like on the front row of this thing, because everybody was coming to Dallas. Let me say hello to our friend Bill. How are you, Bill?
Reasonably well, Silvio, reasonably well. I was also interested in the eclipse, and as I said before we went on the air, we did get dark enough where we are to have to turn on the lights. And so my belief is that this is all a plot by a Consolidated Edison to make money. I'd like to know how much more electricity was used than normal during the eclipse.
Well, that's a very good question, because, you know, the battery business probably did a good job, too, I would think, because they were lots of people running flashlights and stuff like that. So I'm sure lots and lots of people had a lot of fun today. I will tell you this. We were talking before we got on the air. You mentioned that the rental car business had done a good week also. And
yes.
I think I know why, Bill, because all of our hotels were full. People were from all over the world, literally, came
Incredible.
To the Dallas-Fort Worth area to view this thing. I mean, they were interviewing people on television from Australia and this lady from California who came. So it's pretty remarkable. Maybe that's why they rented so many cars, Bill.
That may very well be it. I think we're going to see some interesting economic results of the eclipse. The batteries, yes, absolutely. Although the battery companies apparently went hysterical, because they've learned, and this is true from the weather service, that they expect a very heavy and active hurricane season. And you know how many batteries are sold by department stores when they say a hurricane is coming. So they're going to have a good year.
Yeah. Well, we hope so. We always like for companies to, you know, I always like for companies to make a lot of money, because that means they pay a lot of taxes. And that means that they can prosper and hire people. So I'm all for that.
But
I don't remember, Bill, the last time that there was an eclipse. I honestly don't remember, but I did send a text to my son regarding our you know, newborn grandson, who is literally 3 months old. I told him that he can wait until 2044. That's when the next one is coming, Bill.
Yes, yes. They there are people probably already arranging seats in stadiums to see the one in 2044. We hope the world gets to 2044, and I would like to know Joe Biden's response to the eclipse.
Yes,
I really would.
He always has something to say, so
yes.
I'm sure that I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, if anything had gone wrong, I'm sure they would have blamed it on Trump. So it must have gone okay then. He'll take the credit for it.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, he probably will claim that his administration did it.
That's right,
And they did it in the service of the people.
That they did it for all of those little people from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
That's exactly right. They should have the privilege of seeing this.
All of those people that, thanks to the Biden economy, were able to go out and watch this act nature. We cannot say act of God, because that would be bad.
Can't say that anymore. No, that would be, you know, act of nature. And he will say, you know, I came from Scranton. I also came from Dallas. I also came from Kentucky.
Right.
Different parts, you know. And
but speaking
and
of,
go ahead.
No, you mentioned something that made me laugh, because when he was speaking in Baltimore, he was saying that his family was originally from there. That is,
well,
I guess, his aunt.
Every place he goes, yes, I remember when when my father took me through Baltimore, right on this bridge. I mean, he's from everywhere. He's from everywhere. And the vice president doesn't know where she's from.
Well, one thing we know about President Biden, he took a train over the bridge, except
yes.
that there's no track over the bridge.
No tracks.
He'll have to explain that to us later. But, Bill, let me jump to an issue here that I know concerns you a great deal and concerns me, and that is what's happening with Israel. I never thought I would, I never thought I would feel as if the administration is actually anti-Israel. I'm not saying the president is, because I'm not really sure where he is. I think they put something in front of him to read. But I thought the positions they took against Israel were really negative, Bill. I'm surprised. Were you surprised?
Not completely. The Democratic Party has been moving left for years. And when this administration came in, I noticed a number of let's put it frankly, Arab names associated with appointments at the assistant secretary level in the State Department. And I said, gee, that's an awful lot from one group. I wonder what the story is here. Well, I think, frankly, it was the left wing of the Democratic Party feeling its oats. They are very, very anti-Israel. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why Israel would interest them that much, because Israel actually was created by progressives and by socialists originally, but they've turned very anti-Israel, I think probably to stay in tune with what they regard as the oppressed people of the world. And yes, some of the comments made I think have been very, not only very disturbing, and some of them bordered on the anti-Semitic, but I don't think that some of these individuals know how they're hurting the United States. The big loser here is us, the American people. The reason being that every day, we all know this, the embassies in Washington send back to their countries reports on America. That's one of the things they do. That's why they have experts on America, in America, and they will give their impression of American policy and where it's going. And the one thing you don't want in this world, if you're the United States, is to be regarded as unreliable. And unfortunately, that has been applied to this country before, and justifiably so. We abandoned our friends in Vietnam. In fact, President Ford said about that, he said it was an act of extreme dishonor. We abandoned our friends in Afghanistan in this disgraceful withdrawal, where we left behind people who had worked with us and worked for us. And now we seem to be, if not abandoning Israel, we're not abandoning Israel, we're still sending them arms, but making just about every anti-Israel comment they can think of, and these other countries will write back to their capitals, Israel is one of America's closest allies. If they treat Israel this way, how are they going to treat us?
Right.
And that's an important question, and they're going to say, you know, maybe we shouldn't get as close to the United States as some people think. And that's
right.
What worries me, that we will again be seen as not a particularly good ally. You know, at the end of the Vietnam War, when we abandoned the Vietnamese, there was a line that went around that said, the worst thing you can be in this world is an ally of the United States. And we keep on doing things to encourage that point of view.
Well, what concerns me most about our posture in Israel right now, Bill, is that we're emboldening the other side. I mean, we're
That's
basically
right.
making it easier for them not to cut a deal. I think if we were putting pressure on Hamas rather than Israel, maybe they would cut a deal. Maybe they would actually, do something about the hostages. But it seems to me that we should be helping, or helping Israel put down Hamas so that
exactly.
at least the hostages can get back, and we don't have a repeat of October 7th. I mean, I've got it seems to me that our posture at the moment is making another October 7th more likely, Bill.
Exactly. Not only in the Middle East, but here in the United States. We have people coming across the border who we don't know much about. Some of them are from Middle Eastern countries. And there are many thoughtful people who are predicting that we will have another September 11th because of our policies. So we seem to be doing an awful lot of things, this administration, that makes a disaster for the United States more likely in the future. And I'm absolutely appalled by that.
No, I am too, because the last thing in the world I thought we would be doing is, you know, making life easier for Hamas. I mean, I always thought that what we would do is take the position, hey, Israel, you were attacked and you got to do whatever you're going to do and let us know what you need. That's what I believe we should have done, but we're not doing that, Bill.
No, we did it at first. At first, the president came out and said we are behind Israel. This attack on October 7th was the largest attack on Jews since the Holocaust, and he was absolutely four square. But later, he heard from the left wing of his party, especially the left wing in Michigan, in Dearborn, which has a large Muslim population, and from some elements in Nevada. The joke that was going around was when he started doing this, that Biden's idea of the two-state solution was Michigan and Nevada.
That's right.
And the fact of the matter is that he did yield immediately to these extremists. You know, people call it the terrorist vote, in Michigan in particular. And I think that if I were in the Israeli government, I would say, my God, they're allowing a small group of people in Michigan to dictate the foreign policy of the United States. What's going to happen to us? And I think you may begin to see some nations pulling away a little bit from the United States. I think that especially may be true in the Far East. You know, we have an ally named Taiwan that is under intense pressure right now from China. I think most people believe that China will attempt to take Taiwan. And what would Taiwan be thinking right now with the Taiwanese government when they look at how we're treating Israel? Israel is much closer to America than Taiwan is, and they probably are saying we're going to be left alone as well. And if I were in Asia right now, if I were, for example, in Japan or ironically in Indochina or in the Philippines, I would be very cautious about getting too close to the United States.
Well, Australia too, New Zealand too.
Yes,
I mean,
Australia and
New
Zealand
countries
as well.
In that neighborhood that, you know, are scared to death of China, because China, you know, is expanding significantly. My other concern, Bill, is that, you know, the Israelis shot this or killed this high-ranking Iranian person. And, you know, and now there's even talk of Iran taking vengeance. And that could just be right there, the beginning of a much bigger war, Bill.
It could be. It could be. And yet that is really, you know, they say, well, you know, the Israelis did it again by attacking an Iranian general. They think the story of Iran and the West began on Tuesday last week. It didn't. It began when the mullahs took over Iran in the 1970s. They've been attacking us in different places around the world, and especially in the Middle East, ever since. There are attacks on American troops stationed in the Middle East. There were the attack during the Reagan administration on the Marine barracks came from Iran. This business that every time Israel takes a stand against Iran and takes out a key figure, that they're being provocative is ridiculous. The provocations are coming from Iran.
That's right. No, you're exactly right, and that's where the problem is. We're emboldening these countries. I hate to say it, but we're making them feel better, and that's not a good idea. Let me come up with another topic, Bill. It has a lot to do with New York City. As you know, the police officer who was killed there by that career criminal, and then the whole thing was very emotional. yes, for those of us watching from the outside. And the Attorney General came out a couple of days ago and gave a speech talking about the great success story, how crime statistics are the latest success story of the Biden administration. But apparently it didn't go over well. People are not buying it. And they're not buying it, Bill, because they don't feel safe. I mean, if you're a woman and you take the subway in New York, how could you feel safe to take your wife or your sister or your daughter
right.
to get on the...
That's right.
They can bring up all the numbers they want, but people are not buying it, Bill.
Well, you know, this is an administration that believes that people are interested in government statistics. People are not interested in government statistics. People are interested in what they see. For example, they will say, well, inflation is going down, you know. Well, that technically it may be, but what people already see in their supermarkets is what amounts to a 20% inflation tax from the inflation of the last 2 years. Go into any supermarket and you're stunned by the prices. And those prices are getting higher and higher and higher. It could be from other things besides inflation, but it's not making their job of feeding a family easier. They are interested in the price of milk, not a government statistic about milk. And they are not seeing what the administration wants them to see. And the same thing is true of crime statistics. One of the first rules of good journalism is you cannot tell people they're not seeing what they actually see. And some people have tried in the past, especially the Democratic Party, which tried for years to prove to people there was no crime wave. But they saw what was happening in their own neighborhoods. And they said, oh, yes, there is. And the administration seems completely detached from the country. And worse than that, they don't seem terribly interested in what people think and say. They're interested only in what their statistics can be used for.
Right. Or how they can please the base. Like, for example, doing a proclamation of transgender on Easter Sunday. I mean, I don't know who did that, but whoever I would fire the person in the White House who didn't see the political problem. I mean, that is tone deaf to sign a proclamation like that on Easter Sunday. I mean, I don't care about transgenders as I care about anybody's sexual orientation. But if I worked in the White House and this came across my desk, I would say, wait a minute, we're going to do this on Easter Sunday. Can we do it on Monday instead, guys? So they're tone deaf, Bill.
They're completely tone deaf, and they are on the Israel issue as well. It was amazing to me that they were so concerned about Dearborn, Michigan, but the number of people in the country in every poll who are pro-Israel is way, way beyond the number who are pro-Palestinian, and you'd think they'd know that. And now they're dealing with several communities who are angry at them, but they are tone deaf. The administration has no connection with the country. They are strictly Washington-based. They are the old establishment, and as far as they're concerned, they should be running the country, and that is their attitude.
Well, and I guess they're running it down based on public opinion polls. Something else too, Bill, you mentioned inflation, and I think an area that is very overlooked when it comes to inflation. Inflation is not just the price of bread or the price of yogurt or the price of milk. I mean, that's a big thing, obviously, for a family. But I think inflation is also automobile insurance, homeowners insurance.
Insurance.
Obviously, the price of gasoline. You know, our gasoline bill, all of a sudden, we've gone from like $2.75, where we were a month ago, to like $3.45 in like a month. And I'm sitting there saying, what is going on? You know, what is going on? But that has a, you know, when gasoline goes from $2.75 to $3.45, not only does it cost you more money to fill the tank, but I guarantee you that it's going to cost you more money to buy anything because it has to be transported in, you know, fossil fuel cars. I guess that the electric trucks
and trucks
gotten around, Bill.
Well, that's the point. And from what I understand, one of the biggest expenses that people who buy electric cars are finding is their insurance rates go sky high because they are much more expensive to repair after an accident. that they are, you know, it's a different kind of technology, very expensive to repair, and you're going to be see that in your insurance bills. This whole electric car business, the idea that the government can establish policies to force you to buy an electric car is absolutely outrageous. It really is. And then they have the nerve to say we're the pro-democracy party. They have a very strange definition of democracy.
That's right. Well, I think it's even more crazy with the electric trucks bill, because the electric trucks, I mean, people, if you buy an electric car, like I just met a couple the other day, they bought an electric car to go to and from work. So they don't really, you know, they'll drive a couple hundred miles a week and just charge it at home. But electric trucks are different. I mean, you're going from Dallas to El Paso.
That's exactly right.
You know, Dallas to El Pasoville is 600 miles. And that's a very popular route for truckers, transportation. And if you have to stop three times to charge your truck, it's ridiculous. And then on top of that, these trucks, these batteries for trucks are heavier, which means you are actually damaging the roads more because you're driving heavier trucks. So all of this stuff, nobody, it seems like, it's amazing to me, Bill, nobody thinks about any of this when they're having the conversation in the White House.
That's all they're interested in is the ideology. Only the ideology counts. The results do not count. And another thing about trucks is they're constantly being used. I mean, they're not used for short drives to work. They're used all day long and sometimes all night long, the same truck, until they wear it out, because then they get some value out of it. But there's nighttime driving. There are trucks that go cross country. There are now refrigerated trucks. They never thought of this. They never thought of anything. All they thought about was listen to the environmentalists. They're the base of our party, and do exactly what they say. And these environmentalists are going to put whole sections of America out of business.
That's right. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. Bill, let's take a little break, and we'll come back with our friend Bill Katz right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, as we like to do once a week. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, let me get back to the eclipse story for a second, because, you know, I was actually, I went outside when it got really dark, and I was just thinking to myself, the way I'm reacting to this, I think this is really an amazing natural act, and I can just imagine what people 100,000 years ago must have thought about the first eclipse that they saw. I mean, it must have been, we have all this information, we know it's coming, but back then they had no idea of what this was. So I can understand why there's so much suspicion around these eclipses, Bill.
Yeah, well, you know, there are so many stories out there and so many theories as to what causes them and why they occur when they do. After a while, you don't know what to believe, and the news organizations are not really equipped to handle stories like this.
No,
they whatever they get from the Weather Bureau or their usual sources, but you can be sure that there are going to be some people out there who are going to believe some story that's going to get them in trouble.
Well, Bill, and I think it's only a matter of time that somebody brings climate change into this.
Oh, without question. Of course. I mean, everybody knows that.
Right.
If it wasn't for climate change, we wouldn't even have the sun. Everybody knows
that's right.
That.
That's right. Climate, you know, so somehow or another, they'll bring climate change into this, and they'll say that it happened in 2024 because we're using too much fuel.
Well, that's right. Well, look, I'm very concerned about the possibility of Biden being returned to office, because I also think there's a possibility it's a possibility Republicans are going to have a great year. It's also possible they could have a disaster, because it's been pointed out repeatedly, even by people like Karl Rove, that their ground game is far more sophisticated than the Democrats' ground game is much more sophisticated than the Republicans. They really have done their homework on mail-in ballots, on voting away from home, whereas the Republicans have been pretty lax about that. And, you know, the only poll that counts is the one on Election Day. I hear Republicans talking as if it's in the bag. It's not in the bag. Nothing is in the bag. We are going to have to fight every inch of the way on this election. Always run as if you're 20 points behind. And also, we have a candidate for president who he already has been president. I think he did a good job. I think he deserves another chance. But he has legal problems. Those legal problems, we can think whatever we wish about how those legal problems came to be, whether they were part of some legal conspiracy militarizing the legal system, anything you wish. But if he gets convicted of a crime before Election Day, that might change the vote enough to give it to Biden.
Right.
That's what I'm worried about.
No, I think it's a very valid concern. My concern is that when I look at these, and I will vote for Trump. I think it's a much better choice. But my concern is that there's about 46 or 47% of the vote, or the voters, I should say, who are not going to pay $10 a gallon for gasoline than vote for Trump.
That's right.
And that's what worries me, that, you know, that somehow, you know, he has not been able. I mean, again, there's a lot of time ahead of us. And I remember 1980. I remember 1980 at this time was a very close election. It was actually a very close election 5 days before the election. And then it broke for Reagan for whatever reason. So, you know, it could happen the same here. It could break for him at the end. But his vice presidential choice is very important. And he did something, Bill, today that I think will help him win the election, and that is, I thought he took a very practical position on abortion. He basically said, it's a state issue. That pleases me as the conservative. We need some exceptions, you know, rape and incest. I think that pleases most people who are watching this. And so I think he took a very practical position today. I mean, I guess the extremes will criticize him, but when it comes to abortion, the American people are not in the extremes, though.
Well, I think you're right that it was a good step he took today. He'll still be criticized because the Democrats are out of control in what they're willing to say. They're willing to say almost anything. But I think he did well there. I think I want to pick up the point you made about the vice presidential choice. I wrote about this at Urgent Agenda. Normally, nobody cares about the vice presidential choice except that it's the news story of the day. But here they have to care, because if Biden is elected, I think most people are smart enough to realize that Kamala Harris will probably be president. And that's something they have to think about, whether they want her in that job. And even if Trump is elected, he's not a young man. And I think he will be the first to say out loud, he'll be the one to bring it up. He'll say, look at the vice presidential choices, because both of them have a very good chance of becoming president. And you have to see them in the White House. I think he's going to choose really the best person for the job. I really do. I think he's not going to go small on this, you know, and just reward somebody. I think he's going to choose somebody like Tim Scott, who is highly regarded, and, you know, aside from the fact that he will help with the minority vote, but I think he's a highly regarded man who people feel can step into the presidency. And that should be the standard. And that is where Biden can really get hurt.
Right. Well, I before I give you my choice, I wanted to say something. It's kind of funny, but it's not really funny. And that is, we may be having an election this year where both guys are pointing at each other saying, if I die, my guy is better than yours. And
yes.
If I die,
yes.
My guy is better than your lady or whatever they say. Because you're exactly right. We've never had two men of that age. And they look different on stage. I mean, Trump looks alive, and unfortunately, and I hate to say it, but Biden looks really bad. I'm sorry to say it, because he is the president of the United States.
It's
true. He doesn't look good. But
I don't think he's going to debate Trump.
No. Well, that's probably. I don't see how he can, Bill. I mean, I don't see how he can stand up for 45 minutes and then take a break and come back for. I mean, I just don't see it at all. I don't see it at all. But let me tell you who I think, one last thought here before we go. Let me tell you who I think would be an excellent choice, and I've been thinking about this, and that is Senator Rubio. Now, the reason for selecting him is that, number one, I think he is presidential. Number two, yeah, it would be nice to have a Hispanic. But I think the biggest reason is that this is a very serious senator who's given a lot of thought to national security issues. He has a very reasonable approach to immigration, and I just think he would be a perfect fit. Now, whether they get along or not, I don't know. But politically, I think that would be a great fit, Bill.
I think it would too. I've always liked Rubio. I thought Rubio should have been Trump's choice in the first place when he first ran for president. I don't know if he can guarantee Florida, but he probably can. But Rubio is, there will be a vice presidential debate. And I would imagine that Rubio will cream Kamala Harris unless the debate is rigged by the commentators, because he is far more articulate. He is far better informed on national security issues. And she's not informed on anything. I mean, if they gave her a chance and let her memorize something, she can, get the sentences out. But debating Rubio, I think one will look presidential, one will not. So yeah. I agree with you. I think that's a good choice. I think Tim Scott is a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
There are
yes.
others who are good choices in the party, and I think the bench on the Republican side is pretty deep. There's really no bench on the Democratic side. Because anybody you pick, the left wing is against,
Right.
I mean,
right.
She's not enough. They really think they have a lot of votes, but they really don't.
Yeah. Well, one thing you said is the bench is not very deep. That's exactly right. I mean, when the governor of California is sitting on the bench and he's got a million problems, in fact,
yes.
He's got $73 billion. Dollars of problems. That's the deficit
sure
that they face
does.
Out there, and they're going to have to make some really radical changes in their government because of all the money in that deficit. One last person I'll put on the table. I've said this before, but I think he would help a little bit, and that is Lee Zeldin of New York, who
yes.
I think is a good campaigner. One thing, Bill, that I believe Trump has to do is find someone who's a good campaigner.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, because this could be the only election in our history that was decided by the vice presidential candidates. I mean, I don't recall one in our time that was decided that way. But because of the nature and the unusual circumstances that we face, this could be that one time. So he's going to have to pick a real champ.
Right.
And I think he will. I think he will, too.
I think he understands how big this is. At times he can be petty, I know. But I think this one time, I think he knows how important it is for the country. I mean, it's going to be, one way or another, this is going to be the 2028 nominee. I mean, either as the vice president running for president in 2028, or, God forbid, something happens to President Trump and he has to take over. So, I mean, very likely it will be the next president, Bill.
Well, yes. And the campaign really hasn't begun yet. We think it's begun because the 24-hour news services give this impression that we are really on the brink of selecting the president. But it's only April. It's only April. We have May, June, the beginning of summer, and that's going to be accompanied by higher gasoline prices. Then we have the conventions. We don't know what's going to happen at these conventions. I mean, on the Democratic side, we know that they're going to be mobbed by the left, and there could be trouble, as well there was in the 1968 convention in Chicago. I think it's going to be in Chicago again this year. So, you know, the police department is ready, but it can be a very ugly scene. Now, the Republicans are going to be in Milwaukee, and I'd imagine they are going to have security pretty tight. But the Democratic convention, I mean, just they in Chicago alone, there are so many conspirators that they're guaranteed trouble. I mean, they really guaranteed right. it this time. And well, it could be a very ugly scene.
But one big difference, Bill, you mentioned the police is ready. That's a city that has a real shortage of police.
And, it does.
And I would not – I think the police back in 68 was probably a little bit better than the police today.
They were tougher, that's for sure.
Yeah, they were tougher, and maybe some people thought they were too tough, but they made their point back then. But let me just – I just saw this crossing my desk, Bill, and I wanted to close with this because you talk again about the administration being tone-deaf. I mean, this to me is tone-deaf 101. Pope Francis came out in the last 24 hours and said something about gender – surgery or, you know, this transgender surgery,
yes.
Which, again, to me, it's horrible, the idea that you would change a kid's gender when he's eight
that's
years
right.
old. I mean, that's horrible, absolutely horrible. So he came out and he gave a speech about this. So the White House comes out today saying that the president is very disappointed and wants to remind everybody that he supports the trans community. Well, Pope Francis didn't say that he doesn't support the trans community.
Right.
He just simply says that gender operations are not a good idea, Bill. But again, this is they feel at the White House so pressured that they have to show their support for this community. It's crazy.
Of course it's crazy. And there really aren't that many people in that community. And you can show your support without supporting doing these things to children. I mean, but they talk down to the American people. That's a characteristic of this administration, that they really think the people are stupid and that they can do whatever they want and explain it away. And I don't think they can. I don't think they
right.
can. I think
right.
that if the Republicans had a candidate for president this year who wasn't as full of problems as Trump is, they'd win in a landslide. But we have Trump. We're going to You know, see what happens, but it is going to be an ugly, dirty campaign, and I think that anything can happen.
Right. No, I agree with you on that, but I'm just, if I could just say something about the Pope again, I thought the Pope made a very reasonable, down the middle, you know, he didn't say, I hate transgenders, he didn't say, lock them up, he didn't say, put them in prison, he simply said, we love them. But I don't think it's a good idea to do operations on children. That's where 90% of the country is, probably.
Of course, of course.
And for him, for the president to come out, I don't know. It's just tone deaf, for sure. Well, Bill, I know next week we will not have an eclipse. I hope not.
No.
So I think next week, I don't know. There'll be some other issue, but at least we can say that until the year 2044. There's not going to be an eclipse.
Not unless the Democrats can convince the American people that if Trump gets into office, there will be one every 3 days.
Right,
I mean,
that's right.
Say, we know that's his plan. They'll say we know
that's right. That's his plan. He's going to give us an eclipse every 3 days, so that the rich people can make more money.
That's exactly right. Exactly
yeah, so
right.
That
we know
the
what's the plan.
Rich people can make more money. Well, Bill, have a great week. Thank you so much. It's great to have you back.
Oh, it's great to be back, and we'll be talking again next Monday.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, so great to have him back, and we'll get together again next Monday. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we just saw an eclipse. So I guess the next one is in 2044. Thank you for listening.